Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bofa Metzia Daf Ayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the Shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's Shiur begins three lines from the top of Daf Ayin. The topic heading, namely the Nosei that you see in the margin, introducing this section of Gemara, reads, Lahazbir, we are to explain, Ha, the Omar Shmuel, that which Shmuel teaches. Mois shel yisoyme mutu lahalvoison beribis. Very surprising statement, but we translate, the money of orphans, one is allowed to loan them out to others in exchange for interest. In other words, an interest-bearing loan is permitted when you are using the monies of orphans as the loan. Now, as we indicated, that's a very surprising statement, and we'll have to see how the Gemara deals with that. In the Gemara text itself, you'll notice a few different markings. You notice a house shape that appears in alternating directions. On the side, under our mivneh, our structural note, first of all, we indicate this is a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of this give-and-take style. With the narrow part, or the point, facing up, Din Shel Shmuel Uchivel Savuro. That is the marking to introduce Shmuel's point and responses that function in his on his behalf, for his benefit. The inverted house, Kushios Udchios. They're questions or rejections of whatever was said before that. A double underline highlights another structural facet of this sukya, of this Daf Gemara, Memros Binyan Moshe Yisamu, comments or teachings that have as a common theme the issue of the monies of orphans. Now, philosophically, orphans are considered a weak part of the population, and we try our best to benefit them wherever possible within the guidelines of halacha. So one can understand how there is a tendency to try to do things to benefit them. However, as we said, within the guidelines of halacha, what about interest? Well, let's see the Gemara. Amar Rav Onan, Amar Shmuel. Mois shel yisoymim mutu lahalvoson beribis. Rav Onan quotes Shmuel saying that the money of orphans, you have children that whose the parents died, the father is no longer alive, they inherited cash, you can take their money, loan it to others, and expect interest to be paid. Omar Le Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman says to Rav Onan in a tone of question, of wonderment, Mishum diyasmininu safino lohu isur, because they are orphans, we feed them that which is forbidden. Yasmi da'achli delav didhu, orphans that consume that which is not rightfully theirs, i.e. interest, leizlo basr shivkayu, they will follow those that left them. In other words, their father died, they'll die too. They'll follow their father into the cemetery. Rav Nachman continues and says, Omar Le, Rav Nachman continues, speaking to Rav Onan, Emo Li Izu, tell me, however, Gufa de Uvda Heichi Hava, what was the incident, what happened that generated this statement? Well, if we analyze what actually happened, we might discover something that's truthful. Omar Le, so Rav Onan responds, and he tells us, what happened with Shmuel. After all, Rav Anan, four lines from the top, quoted Shmuel. We circled Shmuel's name so we can keep an eye, so to speak, on his opinion. So Rav Anan says, Hahu, there was an incident. Hahu Duda. Duda is similar to the word dud, a cauldron made of copper, a large pot made of copper. The Bnei Mar Ukva, the Hava Bnei Mar Shmuel. The pot belonged to the Bnei Mar Ukva. These are orphans from Mar Ukva. Mar Ukva died, leaving orphans. This was in the possession of Shmuel. Tokil v'yohiv le, tokil v'shokil le. Shmuel would weigh the pot and give it to someone who wanted it, and upon the return of the pot, he would weigh it, weighing the pot to ascertain the copper content. Shokil agra v'shokil pichasa. Shmuel took money, agra schar would be rent money. He rented out the pot, and he also took pichasa. Pichasa has to do with depreciation. Rashi explains chisaro nechushta. He would take money for the diminishing of the copper content. Now, if you were to think that this that's usur, in other words, you're getting back the original value of the pot, namely, in the event that there was a diminished weight, so Shmuel would receive compensation for that. So the principal value of the pot is maintained, is guaranteed, plus the rent income as well. Now, if you are to think that it's usur to loan, that interest loans are forbidden, interest loans of that which belongs to Yesaimim is forbidden, Iagra lo pechasa vi pechasa lo agra. If you're going to be taking money, rental for it, then you're not entitled to take money for the copper loss. And if you're taking money for the copper loss, thereby insuring the principal value, you're not entitled to take rent money. And yet, he did. So we came to the conclusion that Moishel Yesaimim Mutul Alvos and Beribis. Now, if you're a first time listener, these might strike you as unusual or unfounded ideas. However, we've been discussing for the last number of Dapim this idea that where you guarantee the principal value of something in an unconditional fashion, that is tantamount to a loan. Just like a loan, you give X amount of money as a loan, you get back X amount of money, the same amount you get back, and the borrower has to repay the loan under all circumstances. He has no excuse, even an excuse of onus, I had no control over whatever. That's not an excuse to default on a loan. So too, any item that you are guaranteeing the maintenance of the principal value under all circumstances, that is tantamount to a loan, has the same characteristics as a loan, and therefore you're not entitled to take anything extra. And yet, Shmuel did just that with the pot. And therefore, the conclusion was reached that since he was representing the Yesaimim, Moishe Yesomu Mutul Alvos and Beribis Omar Lei. So Rav Nachman said back to Rav Anan, Ki Ha, what you just described as what Shmuel was doing, Afilu Bidekonani Nami Shori. Dekonani, if you take the dalet of that word and switch it for a Zion, you have an Aramaic Hebrew interchange situation, you would get Zokain. Even with those that are not minor orphans, even with adults, that is allowed. Let's read that again. Ki ha, this kind of behavior, afilu b'dekonani nami shori lemevad, is also permitted. Da mekavli olayu chuscha denachsha. The owner of the pot accepts upon himself another form of depreciation, so that it's not the same as a loan. In the case of a loan, the entire principal value is maintained. Here, when you rent out the pot and you get it back, granted, you're guaranteeing yourself the copper content of the pot. However, you're also getting a pot that has been put on the fire just that more by the one who rented it. That's called chuscha denachsha, the burning devaluation of the pot, the burn value, i.e. the devaluation of the pot as a result of additional burning. The kama de makli nochsha botzir dome, the more copper is subjected to makli is burning, its value is reduced. And so that value, in fact, is absorbed by the owner. Therefore, since the owner is not guaranteeing himself total original value of the pot, original in terms of the point at which it's rented out, there is no problem in accepting rent money for the pot. And of course, it goes without saying that you cannot conclude from here that Mois Sheisam Mutal Alvois and Beribis. By way of markings, if you were following the house direction, the first house we saw here was with the tip pointing up, introducing the idea that money of orphans you can loan out for interest. The last house marking, you see an inverted house marking indicating that simply was not true. And the fact that that conclusion was reached from the issue of the pot was an error. Because as we said, the issue of the pot, or the behavior of Shmuel regarding the pot, is something that's totally allowed. The Gemara continues, Omar Rabo Bar Shilo, Omar Rav Chista V'Amri Lo, another version by way of names, Omar Rabo Bar Yosef Bar Chama Om Rav Sheshes, Mois Shel Yisayme Mutu Lahal Voison Koroiv Lischar V'Rochoik Lehefsid. The monies of orphans one can loan out in a fashion that the chance of gain is great and the chance of loss is minimal. There's a Rashi that we will look at together, just a few lines down from here. Korov l'schar, shu yisaymim noitlim chelik b'schar, where the money of yisaymim is given out, is invested, someone takes the money and uses it to profit with it, and the yisaymim share in the profits. The ein noitlim chelik behefsid. However, if there is a loss in the investment, there the Yisayimim will not share in that. They will get their principal amount back. Avo ribis mamish lo. But actual interest on a loan, that is not allowed. You might ask, what's the difference between actual interest and our case? You'll see that difference will be manifest in a case where the money which was used to invest and bear profit bore no profit. So we said the Yisayimim will get back the principal value. However, the Yisayimim are not going to get back an automatic interest payment. Their chance of gain is only if there is profit. In the case of a regular loan where someone borrowed money, the lender gets back the principal plus something extra, which we call interest, regardless of whatever the borrower did with the money. So let's continue with the Rashi. We said, Avol ribis mamish lo, elo mashi yistakru mosen yachloku. The chance of the orphans getting more is only if their monies that were invested bear profit. The afagav de dikanini osir, even though with adults this would be prohibited. Lav ribis mamashu el avak ribis hu midrabanan. This comes under the category of avak ribis, which we have translated in the past as indirect interest, and it's only prohibited on a rabbinic level. Ubiyasmi lo gozer, when it comes to yisaimim, so the rabbis did not impose their prohibition. Why? Shelo yicholim ma'isem la'achilim pruta achar pruta, so as to avoid a situation where you have orphans with money and it's not invested and the principal is drawn upon on an ongoing basis, eventually nothing will be left for the yisoimim. So in order to guarantee their financial security, the rabbis compromised their ruling that prohibits Kuroiv Lishar and Rochoik Mehefsid, as we described, allowing that for the assignment. We go on, we continue in the Gemara with a Tanaic source that presents several different types of investments following the description that we just gave. And let's continue in the text. Tonu Rabbonan. Karov Lishar veRochoik Lehefsid, someone who engages in that type of investment practice, where he practically insures himself profit and exposes himself to no loss, Rosha, that's a wicked man. Karov Lehefsid veRochoik Lishar Chosid, someone who is willing to accept loss in the event that there is loss and experience very little by way of profit, little chance of profit or little percentage of profit, chosid, that's a very pious individual. Karov loze veloze rochek mizeo mizeh, someone who subjects his money to investments where both are on equal footing, either great chance of profit and great chance of loss, or minimum chance of either one. Zuhi midas kol adam. That's characteristic of most people. Omer le Rabo le Rav Yosef, hani zuzi diasmi hechi avdinan lehu. Rabo asks Rav Yosef, monies of orphans, what should we do with them? Omer le mosvinan lehu beidina. Rav Yosef says we entrust them to the court. V'yavina luhu zuza zuza, and we provide the orphans coin by coin for their daily food consumption. Amale, so Rabba asks Rav Yosef, how is this financially wise? V'ha'ka kalya karna, in that fashion you're going to finish off the principle. Nothing will be left. Amale, so Rav Yosef asks Rabbo Mor Hechi Ovid, what would you do? Omar Lay. So he answers, we have a marking, a crown shape, and on the side, the topic heading, which we already started, reads the Nose, Ech Metaplin B'moys Yisom, how do we deal with the cash of orphans? And under the Mivne, the structural note, this crown shape highlights Eitzes Ech Lin Hoy B'moys Yisom, suggestions of what to do. That suggestions, we first see Rabo and we then see Ravashi. Technically speaking, we saw Rav Yosef as well, but that was rejected immediately. Omar Le, so Rabo answers, as we read, as we noted, Rabo's responding to Rav Yosef. Do note, by the way, this is a long answer. Badkinon gavro de isle dahavo pricha. We investigate or check out in order to find a man that owns gold filings. We'll see later that gold filings are clearly something that he owns. People don't usually entrust gold filings to someone else. So we have a man that has his own financial means. He has gold filings. And as we said, they're definitely his. And v'naktinon da'avo minei, we then take from him the gold as collateral. V'yavinon lehu nihalei, and we take the money of the assignment to this and give it to this man to do business with it, to invest it, buy merchandise, sell it at a profit, and he will buy the merchandise korov l'schar v'rochek lehefsid. The arrangement being, as we explained before, the yesoimim and this man will share in the profits, and in the event that there's any loss, the yesoimim will get back their principal value. Avoldover mesuyim lo, but to take from the man anything else, a dover mesuyim, any other article, possession, as a mashkon, that we wouldn't do. Dilma pikodin inu, what we take from the man might be something that others had entrusted to him. The osi more yoyev simone v'shokilan, the real owner of that item will come forward, give identification marks, and take it. Thereby preventing or depriving the yesoimim of a source of security. So as was suggested, Rabbah said, the yesoimim have the gold filings as a mashkon. If anything should happen, they have that as a source of collection to get back their principal amount. We mentioned before that this kind of arrangement is something that we allow only in the case of Yesoimim, being that this is a rabbinic prohibition. Otherwise, in the case of Yesoimim, the rabbis compromised their restriction. Omar Rav Ashi, Tenach I Mishtakach Gavro de Islei Dava Pricha. Tenach means that's fine. It's a good suggestion. If you find someone that has gold filings, Ilo Mishtakach Gavro de Islei Dava Pricha Nichlu Zuzi de Asmei. If you can't find a man like that, should we allow the money of the assignment? The word that you saw in the Gemara, Nichlu, is to be finished off. Should we allow the monies of the assignment to be depleted? Elo Omar Ravashi. Chazinon Gavro, we investigate and find a man. Demashvu Nichse Umehemon. There are four characteristics. We've used letters to highlight them. Mashvu Nichse is someone who is held on to properties without his ownership being challenged. So over the years, this man's property is known to be his. It's never challenged. His ownership is never challenged. So we can feel a sense of assuredness that those properties are really his. And he's mehemon. He's a trustworthy person. V'shoma dino do reisa. And he heeds Torah law. V'lo mekabel shamto de rabbonon. And he's never the subject of rabbinic excommunication. So you find a man like that is an upstanding, honest man of means. His properties will be the source of security for the Yesoimim's money. The Avinan Lahu Nihale Bevedina, and we will give the money of the Yesoimim to this man in front of the court. And upon his receipt of their money, he will invest it, and they will share in the profits. And if there's any loss, so the Yesoimim will not have to share in the loss. We turn to Amud Beis. At the top, we have a new Mishnah. The Mishnah makes reference to an idea that we had discussed at some length in our previous shiur, Ein mekablin tzoin barzel miyisrael mitneishu ribis. Avo mekablin tzoin barzel mino akum. Tzoin barzel, just to briefly review, is a term. It's a catchy phrase. Literally, iron sheep. But it simply reflects a type of investment where you are guaranteed the principal without subjecting yourself to any loss, and you will gain and share in the profits. That type of arrangement is not allowed between two Jews. So that if I have either merchandise or animals, and I give it to you to profit with, and at the same time I guarantee it the initial principal value for myself, and share in the profits as well, so that is not allowed. And that's what this law is telling us. Ein mekablin tzon barzel miYisrael. So that you cannot, as a worker who would, let's say, develop the animals or invest the monies to buy merchandise and profit with it, you are not allowed to accept that, because it is ribbis. It constitutes a rabbinic form of interest. You are, however, allowed to receive tzon barzel from idol worshippers. Try to profit with it, share profits, you and the idol worshipper, and the idol worshipper is guaranteed to receive at least his principal investment in return. V'lovin mehen u'malvin oison beribis v'chein beger toshav. Jews and idol worshippers, or Jews, are allowed to borrow from them and pay them back their principal plus interest. One can loan to idol worshippers, expecting them to repay the principal and pay you interest as well. The chen begir toshav, and likewise with regard to the sojourner. The ger toshav is a non-Jew who abandoned idolatry, accepted upon himself the seven Noahide laws, but is not by any means a Jew. Malve Yisrael Moisov shel Akum Midas Akum Avolo Midas Yisrael. This issue will be developed in the Gemara, but on a superficial level, the Mishnah seems to be saying that a Jew can take the money of an idol worshipper and loan it to others in expectation of receiving interest. Who will benefit from the interest? The idol worshipper. What appears from the Mishnah is that the Jew is serving as an intermediary, a broker, loaning out the idol worshipper's monies. So if it's Midas Ha'akum, it's allowed, but not Midas Yisrael. In these terms, we will have to wait for the Gemara to expound upon them. Regarding the Tzon Barzel, we see in the Mishnah that the prohibition is a prohibition that's based on the Isur of Ribis. When someone comes along accepting the Tzon Barzel, the animals for development, and eventually returning the animal or their principal value with profit, the one who was working with it, the receiver, he's called the makabel, the worker who takes it and works with it and develops it, the prohibition of the Mishnah is a result of his accepting full responsibility over the item. So it's considered in his domain, and being that it's in his domain, it's like he borrowed cash, and hence the return of the principal plus profit is similar to paying back a loan with interest. So the Gemara draws from the Mishnah reaches a conclusion. The problem will be that there appears a contradictory source, or that which seems to be contradictory. On the side of the Gemara, under our Nosei / Mivne heading, a diamond marking appears, and it represents Yishuvim, resolutions, L'stira b'mishnosenu, to resolve a contradiction, or a seeming contradiction, between our Mishnah d'mashma, the Tzon Barzel b'rishus ha-makabel, that in a Tzon Barzel form of investment, the item is in the possession, it's considered in legal terms, in the reshus, in the domain of the receiver. Le Mishnah de Bechoros, in opposition to a Mishnah regarding laws of the firstborn animals, the Mashna de Reshus Balabayas Kaimo, regarding the issue of Bechoros, which we'll explain as we go into the Gemara, it appears that the Tzon Barzel arrangement is such that the item is still in the domain of the original owner, not the Makabel, the receiver. So now, the Gemara. L'meimra de Birshus de Makabel Kaimo. From the teaching of our Mishnah, that the Tzon Barzel arrangement is prohibited because of Ribbis, it would then mean that the item that's received is for development, for profiting, is considered in the domain of he who is receiving it. Just like one receives a loan, the money is in the domain of the borrower. So again, let's read that. L'meimra d'brishus d'mekabel kaimo v'raminu, but we raise as a contradiction. Ha'mekabel tzon barzel min ha'nochrim v'lodois p'turim min ha'bechora. First, a word about bechora. Firstborn male animals, from kosher variety animals and donkeys as well, have a special status called bechora. And besides the donkey, or with the exception of the donkey, those firstborn animals are essentially holy, and in the time of the Beis HaMikdash would be brought as a sacrifice. Before that, the owner of the firstborn would have given it to a Kohen as one of the Kohen's entitlements, Matnas Kahuna. In this case, someone had a deal with a Nochri, with an idol worshipper. An idol worshipper had an animal, and he gave it to a Jew to develop, to feed, to care for, and eventually sell it and share in the profits. In the meantime, the Jew who received the animal bore an offspring, including a firstborn male animal. The firstborn male animal, does it have Kedushas Bechor? Is it considered sanctified as a Bechor or not? Obviously, animals owned by idol worshippers there's no relevance between them and the laws of Bechor. That the Bechor is one of the 613 mitzvahs that Jews observe. It has no, a goy, an idol worshipper is not bound by that at all. If Tzon Barzel is in the domain of the worker, the one who receives it, who received it in this case? A Jew received it from the Nochri, from the idol worshipper. If it's in the domain of the Jew, why would it be exempt from the laws of Bechor? From the fact that it says in this source, when you receive or enter a Tzon Barzel arrangement, and the original owner happens to be a Nochri, an idol worshipper, there's an exemption from Bechor, showing us that the Tzon Barzel, the item that you received for investment purposes, remains in the domain of the original owner, not in the domain of the Makabel. Yet in our Mishnah, it seemed that it was in the domain of the Makabel. Omar Abaye lo kasha. Abaye, approach number one, says there's no contradiction. Ha de Makabel ole oinsa vezula. Ha de lo kabel ole oinsa vezula. It depends on what the owner, the original owner, accepts upon himself. In the case of Bechoros, the original owner accepted upon himself onsa, that's if there's any loss that's a result of something beyond the worker's control, the original owner, the Nochri, will absorb that loss. Zula, if there's any depreciation, market drop in value, owner accepts that. Investor doesn't have to compensate. In a case like that, where the owner is very much involved with the, from we'll say, loss aspects, he maintains responsibility, so the animal remains in his domain, so to speak, so certainly with regard to Bechora. In our Mishnah, the original owner doesn't accept any loss, whether it's through ones or through depreciation. Hence, the item is completely in the domain of the mekabel, the receiver. Omar le Rova. Rova has a question. You'll notice it lasts a number of lines. There's a two-part question. Number one, e de kabel ole mora oins of azula, if the original owner is accepting upon himself those forms or aspects of loss, some barzel correspondingly, the emphasis on the word barzel. Barzel means iron. Iron is something which is viewed, as we explained in our previous year, unchanging, static, no loss. How could you call an investment given to someone where the owner is not guaranteeing the maintenance of the original value? He is not guaranteeing that for himself. How can you call that some barzel? Barzel is something that doesn't diminish, and in the what you described, where the owner accepts upon himself Ainsa Vizula, he's accepting the possibility of diminishing. So that's not something that you would call iron. Vioid. Furthermore, Rova says in terms of his question on Abaye, Aditoni Seifa, instead of the Seifa, the latter part of our Mishnah, the continuation of our Mishnah saying, Avo Mekablim Son Barzel Meno Akum, the Mishnah wants to give an allowance for when Son Barzel is allowed, so the Mishnah says it's allowed when you're dealing with an idol worshipper. Liflog Bididei, why not stay within the realm of you're dealing with a Jew, where the owner is a Jew? Bamedvom Amurim, when is it forbidden to accept from a Jew, Tzon Barzel, the lo kabel alop mora ein sevazula, where the original owner doesn't accept upon himself the losses incurred through oines or through depreciation. Avo kabel mora ein sevazula shaber domi. But if the original owner accepts oines loss or zoil loss, the arrangement would be allowed. So if Abaye's answer is correct, then the Mishnah, in order to show a heter, wouldn't have had to lapse over into the realm of idol worshippers. But it did. So it seems that we can't use Abaye's distinction. And if we can't use his distinction, we're back to square one, whereby we have a contradiction in Tanaic sources. Elo Omar Rova, Idi V'idi, Delo Kabal Ale, Mora Ainsa Vezuva. Both our Mishnah and the Mishnah involving the Bechoros, the owner is not accepting upon himself those forms of loss. And since the owner is not accepting those forms of loss, he's guaranteeing the principal value for himself. Well, if he's guaranteeing for himself the principal value, then the arrangement would seem to be one like a loan, where you get back the principal value. Why then, if a Jew is receiving from an idol worshipper the animal for development, for profiting, why is it exempt from Bechora? After all, the owner doesn't accept any form of loss, so the item, the merchandise, the animal, is completely in the domain of the mekabel, of the, in this case, the Jew that received it for investing. Vegabi Bechoros Hainu Tam Devlovis Purmina Bechoro. And regarding the issue of firstborn animals, This is the reason that it's exempt. After all, just to repeat the main problem, when you say the owner doesn't accept any form of loss, it would appear that the animal is completely in the legal domain of the Mekabel, when this case is a Jew. Why is the firstborn male animal not going to be holy? Kevon, the Elo Yohiv Zuzi, if the Jew would not pay money to the Goy, in the event, let us say, in the event that there's a loss, what has to be? The Mekabel has to compensate, offer a cash compensation to the Goy. If the Jew would not pay the Goy, the idol worshiper, cash, Asi Nochri Tofis Lo Labahema, the Balabos, the original owner, the idol worshiper, will come and claim his animal back. Vilo Mashkach Lo Labahema, and if he doesn't find the mother, the animal that he gave, Tofis Lu Levlados, he will not hesitate to grab as compensation the offspring. So that firstborn animal is in line for potential recovery by the idol worshiper. Vahavile, and we describe this using a term, Yad Nochri Bemsa. Literally, the hand of the idol worshiper is in the midst. And that means he's still heavily involved, in potential terms, with these animals. The Cholyad Nochri Bemsa, and when you have a situation like that, Potter Mina Bechora, the laws of Bechora are suspended. The laws of Bechora are taught in the Torah, firstborn Jewish-owned animal, not that which an idol worshiper has a hand in. Before we go further in the Gemara, we want to take note of some of the markings. A bow tie shape appears, a Roman numeral number 1, you might notice. Where there's a 1, there's got to be a 2. And the 2, you will see, 4 lines from the top of Daf Ayin Aleph, Omed Aleph. On the side of the Gemara, under our Mivneh heading, we have a bow tie featured, also indicating that we have Roman numerals 1 and 2. Shnei Lishayne Shirav Huna, two versions of Rav Huna, Shehid Batei Beinyan Ribis Shel Akum, where Rav Huna expressed himself within the topic of interest with regard to idol worshippers. So structurally, we know that we're going to deal with that general topic, interest in the context of idol worshippers. The nosei, the immediate topic heading that we have here, liyashiv divrei Rav Huna shebein megana lekichas ribis me'akum im mokur shematir. We want to resolve, on the one hand, Rav Huna's comment that, or Rav Huna's attitude, a negative attitude toward receiving interest from idol worshippers. In other words, if you loan money to an idol worshipper, you can expect the principal return, but don't try to collect interest. And as opposed to a source that would seem to indicate it's quite all right to accept an interest payment from an idol worshipper. The Gemara opens up with a posuk from Mishlei, Mar behoinoi b'neshech v'sarbis, l'cheinen dalim yikabtsenu. The approximate translation of this is one who increases his wealth through collection of interest, his wealth is really being collected for the Choinen Dalim. Now, the Choinen Dalim is a very pleasant sounding expression, meaning one who shows grace and favor for the poor. So it's as if it's saying that one who collects interest, his money will go to benefit the poor. However, you'll see in a minute that it's far from that. The Gemara says, "My lechoinen dalim." What is referred to by that term? Omar Rav kagon shavur malka. Shavur Malka is King Shafur, the Persian monarch. So that one who collects interest, let him be forewarned that his wealth will be plundered by the Persian monarch. And the term Chonein Dalim means he'll this person's wealth that he amasses through interest collection will go to benefit the poor. The poor is a reference to idol worshippers that are poor in mitzvos. They, as Rashi says, Shavur Malkut, toward the end of the narrow lines, Melech Parasoy v'Neitam Om Yisrael, v'Chonein Bohem Dalim Nochrim, he would plunder Jewish wealth and use it to distribute to Dalim Nochrim, Shem Dalim in HaMitzvahs, to distribute amongst the idol worshippers, his subjects. Their poverty is not one of impoverishment in wealth terms, but impoverishment in terms of mitzvos. So he would plunder the wealth collected by Jews or amassed by Jews through interest, through usury, and distribute it amongst his own people. Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Li Huna, Lo Nitzrucha Elod Afilu Ribis De'Oivei Kechavim. The Pasuk that we just read, that forewarns against collecting interest, is a reference even to interest collected from idol worshippers. Such wealth that one amasses in that fashion will eventually disappear. So, in simple terms, Rav Nachman is telling us in the name of Rav Huna that one is not allowed to collect interest from idol worshippers. Eisvei Rava l'Rav Nachman. Rava challenges Rav Nachman based on a pasuk. Before we continue with the Gemara text, let our eyes simply glance to the side in the margin where we have recorded the pasuk Dvarim Perek Chav Gimel Pasuk Chav Aleph. It says Lenochri Sashich Laachicha Lo Sashich. The word Tashich has to do with interest. We can't translate the word in precise terms yet. That we'll leave for the Gemara. But the pasuk is making a contrast between the Nochri, the idol worshipper, Tashich. Lachicha, fellow Jew, lo tashich, do not tashich. Leman yivarechicha Hashem alokecha b'chol mishlach yodecha al oretz asher ata bo shama l'rishta. By observing the commands of this pasuk, the Lord Almighty will bless all of your income gained on the land of Israel that we are to inherit. So Rava asks Rav Nachman, does the pasuk not say lenochri tashich, my tashich, lav tashuch? The word tashich, does it not mean tashuch? Now, here you're dealing with grammar, and for those of us who are not very familiar with the Hebrew language or Hebrew syntax, we just have to accept that tashuch means would be collecting interest from the Gentile, from the idol worshipper. So when you read the pasuk, it says lenochri tashich, and if we're explaining tashich means collecting of interest, the pasuk is saying when you're dealing with an idol worshipper, collect interest from him. That's against Rav Huna. Lo, that's not the understanding of the pasuk though. Tashich means simply you give him interest. In other words, when you're dealing with an idol worshipper, pay him interest. The Gemara asks, why would the pasuk speak like that? Lo sagi de lav hachi. Is it not sufficient without that? In other words, is the Torah commanding me to give interest to the idol worshipper? Can I not have a situation where I repay a loan without adding interest to the loan? To the repayment. So the Gemara says, when the Pasuk says, give interest to the idol worshipper, it's not telling us specifically that you have to give him interest, but rather lafuke achicha delo. The pasuk wants to contrast that with a fellow Jew, where it's strictly prohibited to give a fellow Jew interest. The Gemara asks, if that's the purpose of the pasuk, achicha behedyksiv be lachicha lo sashich, I don't need the pasuk to say lenochri tashich for me to infer from that a prohibition of giving interest to a fellow Jew, when the pasuk says explicitly you cannot give interest to a fellow Jew. The Gemara says, in fact, we will use the pasuk for that inference, and you'll ask, but now appears to be redundant. No, lavor olav be'aseh v'lo saseh. The pasuk is telling us, when it says l'nochri tashich, it's telling me that one who gives interest to a Jew is in violation of two commands. He's in violation of a positive command that appears in the form of l'nochri tashich. Give the nochri interest, and we infer, and not a fellow Jew. That's called a positive command. And then the lotasa, the explicit ulochri ulochich, ulotashich. So far, then, we do not see a command or a posuk entitling me to collect ribbis from the idol worshipper. So, just to repeat, at this point in the Gemara, we are sticking with what Rav Nachman told us in the name of Rav Huna. You shall not collect ribbis from, you shall not collect interest from the idol worshipper. As far as the posuk is concerned, it is telling me, when it says lenochri tashich, which is telling me that when you take interest from a fellow Jew, you're in violation of an aseh and a lo saseh. But do not understand the pasuk of lenochri tashich that you are allowed to collect interest from him. Not so. All the pasuk means is that you are, if you on the translation level, give him interest. And as we explained, it doesn't mean you have to give him interest, but the giving of interest to a fellow Jew would result in violating an aseh and a lo saseh. Esvei, well, we raise again a question on Rav Huna. Here, you see, it says, Lovin mehen umalvin ois son beribis v'chein begir toshav. This is a quote from the Mishnah, which was speaking about Mekablin son Barzel from the Akum, and in addition to that, v'lovin mehen umalvin ois son beribis. You borrow from them, and with interest, and you loan to them and collect interest. V'chein beger toshav. So you see that you loan to them malvin oisam beribis and collect interest, and that's not like Rav Huna. Omar Rav Chiya braid Rav Huna lo nitzrucha ela. This teaching or this Tanaic source that speaks about collecting ribbis from an idol worshipper is, we continue at the top of Daf Ayin Aleph, Bichdei Chayov. The minimum amount that one needs to live on, so there the rabbis are matir. They allow you to collect interest from the idol worshipper. But more than that, the rabbis prohibit. Do not collect interest from the idol worshipper. We're going to get into that a little more in the Gemara, but before that, we first look at Rashi at the top line. Bechdei chayav hitirulo, enough to subsist on that amount you're allowed to collect from the idol worshipper. V'yoser mikan osur midirabbanan, but more than that is rabbinically prohibited. Dilma osi lemisrach, the fear that you might continue to develop too close a relationship with the idol worshipper. Ravina, we continue in the Gemara, Omar, Hacha b'tamidei chachamim askinan. I just want to, before we go further, I just want to qualify that we explained Lemisrach in a particular way. We were explaining that in light of the upcoming Gemara. But there are other possible translations to Lemisrach, and that would mean that you would become accustomed to collecting interest, even in strictly prohibited situations as well. So let's continue in the Gemara, leaving that issue of what is the intention of Dilma Asi Lemisrach in this particular context. But Ravina, he says that the Tanaic source that says Malvin Oysan Beribis is restricted to Hocha B'Tamidei Chachomim Maskinon. That is a heter, an allowance with regard to Torah scholars. They can loan idol worshippers and collect interest. Taimo my gozer rabbonon. Why is there an initial rabbinic ruling not to loan them and collect interest? Shemo yilmat mi maisov. This is what we were referring to before, that you might come to learn from his ways. We want to minimize contact between Jews and idol worshippers. If we allow to loan money to them for interest, so the Jew is motivated to loan the idol worshipper money, and that could result in too close a relationship with them and eventually learning from their idolatrous ways. The cave and the Talmud Chacham Hu, since the lender that was featured in the Tanaic source at the bottom of Ayinim Beis was a Talmud Chacham, lo yilmod mimaisov, he won't come to learn from his ways. Iko demasni law lahad Rav Huna ahad Tani Rav Yosef. There's another version of what to apply Rav Huna's statement to. So there are those that apply Rav Huna to the following source taught by Rav Yosef. The pasuk says, "In kesef talves ami es haoni imach." And on the side of our Gemara, under our topic heading, we've noted Sidre Kedima Benesinas Hava, an order of priority unto whom to extend a loan. Mi yesh lahadif kishishnayim boyim lekabel hava. Who should you prefer in choosing to give a loan? So we read the pasuk, which speaks about when you come to loan money, ami v'nochri, if it's a Jew versus an idol worshipper, ami kodem, a fellow Jew takes precedence. Oni v'ashir, oni kodem, if two people are seeking a loan, one is an impoverished individual and the other is a man of means, you would give the loan first to the impoverished person. You might be asking, what a man of means, what does he need a loan for? So, many times there are people that have wealth but don't have liquid funds, or they have a great opportunity, an investment opportunity, and need the money for that. That's a situation where an usher might want a loan. But if at the same time an oni is seeking out a loan, you give precedence or preference to the oni, to the poor man. Aniyecha v'aniya irecha, aniyecha kaidmim, members of one's family that might be indigent versus townsfolk that are in that situation. Aniyecha kodmin, your own relatives, your family relatives have precedence. Aniyeh yiruchav, aniyeh yiracheres, poor folk from your own town versus poor folk from an outside town. Aniyeh yiruchav kodmin, the poor folk of your town have precedence. Omar Mor, now we quote from what we just learned, and we're anticipating seeing a Rav Huna teaching. Ami v'nochri, ami kodem. If there's a Jew and an idol worshiper vying for a loan, the fellow Jew has preference. Pshita, is that not obvious? Omar Rav Nachman, Omar Lihuna, Lo nitzrocha elo dafilu lenochri beribis liyisrael bechinam. The precedence or preference we give to the Jew is even in a case where the loan that you would have extended to the nochri, to the idol worshiper, would have been profitable for you through the interest that he would have paid, versus the loan that you would extend to the Jew, whereby you will not profit from it. Nevertheless, the loan to the Jew has preference. Tanya, Omer Rabbi Yossi, Bo Re'e, Kamos Samu Yoseinayim Shel Malvei Beribis. Come and see how blinded the usurers are, those who loan money for interest. In general, Adam Kere L'Chaveiro Rasha, if someone calls his neighbor, a fellow man, a wicked, you're a wicked person. The person who was insulted, Yored Imo L'Chayav. There's a bit of a discussion in Rashi what that phrase means. So Rashi, in his the approach that he seems to prefer, you can see Yored Imo L'Chayav, Rashi in the upper part of the narrow lines. Rogil is Koitet Imo, Kilu Hiko, Kilu Bo L'Hargo. That will simply engender being insulted by being referred to as a wicked person, will simply engender strife and incompatibility between people. Vehaim, and when it comes to people who extend loans in exchange for interest, Mevi'im Edim, the Lablor Vekumus Udio, they invite witnesses, a Lablor, a scribe, a Kumus, a quill, Dio, ink, the Kaisvin, the Chaisman, they write out and sign on a document, the loan document with interest in it, Ploni Zeh Kofar Belekei Yisrael, announcing that so and so is a denier of the Almighty. Someone who doesn't, who loans in a forbidden fashion, simply doesn't have faith in God's ability to provide him with a kosher form of income. So that when it comes to standard daily behavior, being referred to as a Rasha is cause for strife and arguing. And here, people in a willing fashion announce themselves as being wicked, the ultimate wickedness being one who is a denier of God Almighty. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Elozer Oimer, Kol mi sheyesh lo mois umalvo isom shelo beribis, anyone who has money and loans the money without taking interest, Olav HaKosuv Omer, regarding him, the Pasuk says, Kaspo lo nosan beneshech, he extended his money without taking interest. V'shochar al noki lo lochach, nor did he, the pasuk describes someone who did not take bribes against the innocent. Oyseile lo yimot, one who behaves thusly, who abstains from interest and shuns bribes, lo yimot lo'lam, will forever not fall down. Yimot is an expression meaning collapse. He will never collapse. Ha lamadata shekala malve beribis nechasav mismaitet. And from this you can infer that those who loan for interest, so his property will collapse. Gemara asks, v'hoka chazinon delo moisve beribis v'kama smaitet. We find people that don't loan for interest, and yet they collapse. Omar Rebbe Elazar, halalu mismaitetin v'oilin, halalu mismaitetin v'einon oilin. Nevertheless, is a distinction. There are those that loan without expecting interest. True, they may fall on hard times, but they eventually rise. Those who loan for interest, when they collapse, their collapse is of a permanent nature. Lomo sabit boigdim tachrish kevala rosha tzadik mimeno. The drosha, first the translation of this pasuk, we'll say the approximate translation is where the prophet turns in a call. How is it that you? It seems to be, we'll say, call heavenwards. How is it that you can see, look upon a situation when the sinners consume, when the sinners and the wicked consume the those that are more righteous than they? In other words, a description of a situation where it seems as if there is no justice, where the wicked are consuming the righteous. However, Amar Rav Huna, tzadik mimenu bolea, tzadik gomur eino bolea. Similar to the drosha just before, where we were describing those that are honest and proper in their financial behavior, though they may experience setbacks, it's not permanent, in contrast to the truly wicked. This pasuk is describing a situation where the wicked seem to gain an upper hand, but the pasuk is saying they gain an upper hand or consume those that are more righteous than they, than the wicked. So you can have someone that's extremely wicked and someone that's mildly wicked. The one that's mildly wicked can be described as tzadik mimenu, is more righteous than the extremely wicked. So the pasuk is describing a situation where the extremely wicked consume those that are defeat, consume, bala means to absorb or swallow those that are more righteous than they. However, the pasuk is not acknowledging a situation where the wicked consume someone who is a tzadik gomor, a completely righteous individual. Rashi says, tzadik gomor eino bolea, v'afal pi shem ismoitet, even though the tzadik gomor might experience collapse, the eino, however, oile, the eino nivla li oilom. He rises and does not remain swallowed up forever. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.